Today's Mishnah in Kalim Review is the 14th Perek, which is Kli Matachot, and this is actually the last of the Prokim that talk about the Dinim of Kli Matachot specifically. And we're going to move on to the next Perek already into Kli 8. So the Dinim that we talk about over here is what is considered to be the shear of breakage when it comes to a Kli Matachot, and what is the Din where we've got a mixture of wood and matechet, which we began in yesterday's parak, in the previous parak. We continue some prote dinim today. So let's start off our 14th parak called Kli Matachot and talk about the general klalim. So general klalim is that normally we talk about things that can be used to carry out a particular thing that they're designed for. Now, when it comes to other things besides Kli Matachot, it doesn't matter whether it continues to do what it was designed for, as long as it's usable. But when it comes to Kli Matachot, there we've got a problem. And that's because since it's easy to fix, people will generally not turn it to some kind of other usage. They'll simply fix it. And because of that, it can't become tamei, even though it still has usefulness. Remember, we discussed numerous examples of these things. And so the question would be, what would be the overall usage? Okay, so we give examples of that. I mean, if you're talking about a bucket, it needs to be able to draw some water with. If you're talking about a tea kettle, it needs to be able to heat some type of amount of water usable for a cup of tea. If we're talking about things which have multiple usages initially, such as people who like to keep their loose change in their tea kettle, so then it would be the shear that would be able to hold those coins and so on. And we have machlokas of how far that goes. We also have a question of whether something that's missing its cover and has not as yet, the cover hasn't been finished. So this is another question. The Gome Kli Matachot, because we talked about earlier, is not considered to be Mekabel Tumah because it is too valuable, or because it's Machlokas Chulin we spoke about, either because it's too valuable and people are not going to market something that would be so much more valuable if you finish it properly, or it's because of the fact that people like to use it at important functions and it's not really usable. So if it's not yet polished, it doesn't have that polish on it, which may just be in that final thing, it's still considered to be Torah because the Kli is not finished yet. Masha Enkein, if it doesn't have a top, that's something else. That's a machlokas. Now, we also learned in the previous parak, we learned the din of something that is made from both wood or some other material and metal. It goes according to what's the primary part and what's the secondary part. And therefore, if the metal, because otherwise it wouldn't have a base kibble. So we're going to talk about a couple of things like that. We're talking about if you've got, again, we talked about the kind of stick that's got a metal ball on top. Those are useful for smashing in people's heads. And because of that, those are considered to be a kli, but it's the type of kli that is metal, even though most of it is wood. But the smashing part is metal. Then there's questions about, okay, how much of it is considered to be a real weapon and how much of it is considered to be just decorative, because people don't always go around smashing people's heads. So over there, we talk about the spikes and how many spikes it has, whether it only has two spikes, then it's decorative, it has three spikes. Again, you use your imagination, the klal is obvious. So another example of a type of thing would be, let's say you have a metal tube that you put at the end of a cane, which was made out of wood, or you've got a metal tube that you put on the underpart of a door. In both of these cases, the metal is there to protect the bottom of the cane or to protect the bottom of the door from rubbing. Over here, obviously, the main part is the walking part of the cane and the wooden part of the door that closes, and there, naturally, it would not be Mekabel Tumah. However, one caveat, and that is if this were a kli on its own that was later attached to the door, then it can still be tamei, because it, since you didn't change it in any way, it would become tamei. And it only becomes tahor when it's actually ruined, according to Beit Shammai or according to Beit Hillel. As soon as it's permanently connected to a door, even though you didn't change anything in it, it's no longer Mekabel Tumah because it's Mechuber. And we go through all kinds of different things that are like this, that have different pieces on it. So there's a lot of tools that have metal pieces attached to these long handles, whether they're used for making holes in walls, for smashing through walls, pegs for tents, pegs that are used by surveyors that connect their chains to the ground. In all of these cases, even though they are put into the ground, they're not meant to stay in the ground, and therefore they're not going to lose their din of tuma. And the main thing over there is, of course, the peg per se, or a surveyor's change that he uses to measure with. Those things are all considered to be tame. Things that are just meant for tying and so on are not considered to be tame. They don't have an independent name. Then we talk about what would be considered to be extensions of metal kalim. So if you've got something that is attached to, let's say you've got a chain. If the chain is too long, any part that is beyond the necessary use is not considered to be yad of the kli. That is, again, something that we've already spoken about many times, that general rule. Continuing on with the general approach is a little difficult because the next couple of Mishnayos talk about very specific kalim. And what the, just like that famous Buddhist work about the nature of an agala, what is the agala? And you remember it goes through all of the different parts of the agala. Well, we've got a Mishnah like that also. So it goes through, first the Mishnah goes through all of the tame parts of the agala, and then it goes through all of the Torah parts of the agala. The general rule being, obviously, that anything is that is doing the work of the agala is considered to be part of the metallic definitive kli, and therefore would be able to become tame. That would include the yoke, would include the crossbars that go underneath, that connect to the yoke, and it would be talking about the parts that you clip in, the straps into, and it would be talking about the protective metal pieces that go under the neck of the animal, the rings that you attach the wagon to, even the metal piece in the bell, the inbell in the bell that's used for people to be able to identify where their wagon has disappeared to, and things like that. All of that is tame. Anything that is decorative in any way, since it is not directly decorative to the Adam, all of those things are tahor, or things that are made out of wood and that don't have a base kibbol. So there's a lot of lists of things like that, including even cute things like the there are these little tubes that make sounds like the wind chimes. So they've got these chimes that that hit against each other as the shore draws it. You know, it makes a lot of nice noise as it's walking along. Very cute. And then there's other things that are not going to be mekabel tuma, like the wheel rims. So those are things where they are bottled to the wheel, because the wheel, obviously, the main thing is the wheel. The rim around the wheel is just sort of a protection. Anything that's there just for good looks. And then there's a lot of nails that are put in, you know, with those decorative tops and not really put into whole things together. Those things are all things that would be tar. Then things that are worn by an animal also are considered to be tar, unless, remember, we had the famous case, we talked about this at Shabbos as well, of the shoes that an animal wears in order. Those are real shoes that go over the actual bottom of the foot, not what we call a horseshoe. And they have a base kibbol. And since in time of war, when soldiers are desperate, they could use those things as containers to get water. So that is considered to be a normal usage. Okay, then we talked about rusting. At what point rusting is considered to take away the din of Kabbalah Stuma when it's no longer usable? Fine. Now let's move on to the question about covers. So we talked before that where something is not doesn't have a name of its own, it's the cover of another kli, it's not going to become a tuma. However, can you make that cover into a kli? Well, remember, we did talk about the case of the doctors who use the cover for keeping medications and so on and so forth. How about if you polish a cover and now you're using the top of the kli also as a mirror, which actually you do see quite often, just kalim that have mirrors as their covers. So even though a mirror can become tameh over here, it's not really called a mirror, according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim are metameh. What's the din of a metallic mirror that breaks in terms of the din of Shvira, which is the main point of this parak? It's got to have enough left to serve as a mirror. And what is that? It can still show you most of your face. Then it's still considered to be a kli. Otherwise, it becomes tar. Remember that we talked about the din of Chozer L'Tumah HaYishana? So there's a big and very fascinating machlokas. We talked about one machlokas about Chozerim L'Tumah HaYishana, as to whether that's a din in all Tumah, or whether it's only a din in Tumah's Meis, and that was a function of what the Gezerah was. Is the Gezerah because we're afraid that the Paro will go out of usage, or is the Gezerah because of the problem of people getting away without doing Harav Shemesh, and therefore Harav Shemesh going out of knowledge of people? But there's another interesting question. It's absolutely a fascinating question. If you have a kli that was tamei tumas meis, and now you went ahead and you actually had done your first hazoya of the Pora Aduma, and then you went ahead and melted it down, they broke, you melted it down, you reformed it, now it's the same day, which is the third day that you were, was third day from the time it was metame, and now you go ahead and you do the second Hazoya, not on the seventh day, but you do the Hazoya on the same day that you recreated the Kli. So the question is the recreation of the Kli, put it exactly back, Midrabonan, to the Tumah of the level of post-third day Hazoya, and now you start the count from now until the seventh day? Or do we say, no, wait a minute. I mean, this is not the same kli, no matter what. So, I mean, the difference between the Hazoya on Yom Shlishi and Yom HaShvi'i is always when it's the same kli. I mean, for all intents and purposes, this thing has just come into being, right? You're not telling me that I have to go ahead and start all over, obviously, because you're saying, you already did the Hazoya once. Okay, so now you have to do the Hazoya the second time. When something just came into being, for all intents and purposes, it could be a billion years old. So maybe it's already a billion years since the first Hazoya, since we no longer have any other referent. And because of that, amazingly, according to Rebbe Eliezer, there is no time in which you need to do the Hazoya, which is such a beautiful halacha. So that's a tremendous kula. Rabbi Yeshua argues, and he says, no, wait a minute. I mean, the whole idea over here was that we're afraid of people messing up the Parah Adumah. I mean, what's going to happen if people do the two Hazoyas on one day, okay? And just because of the fact that technically speaking, it's already a nuclear. No. There's no such thing. A Hazoya is a Hazoya is a Hazoya. It's always Shlishi, Vishvi, and that's it. And then the last Mishnah talks about all of these weird shaped keys, in which a key is shaped like it has a bend in the middle, and you need to put it in, and then you need to bend it. And the question is, which parts are made out of metal, and which parts are made out of wood? And then it talks about keys that use both female parts and male parts, so that they don't just have keys, they don't just have pins, they actually have places where pins on the other side fit into the holes of the, so they have teeth and holes in the key. Question is, what is made out of metal? What is made out of wood? Use your imagination for understanding which part is considered to be the most chosh of a part, which part is not. And we close with the question of at what point does a strainer end up not being a useful strainer because different parts of the holes have come into each other. So now you've got a hole in your strainer that's too big and it lets the wrong things out. So once you've got three of those holes and a mustard strainer that are together, then it's going to be tar because you're not going to be able to use it for mustard straining. And we finally get to what the din would be of that afar cheset. Remember, hateos nechaka afar cheset. That afar cheset is a grain hopper, and it's important to know that grain hoppers are considered to actually be part of the kli, that is its own kli, and not bottle to the gigantic hopper, which is maybe made out of eights and so on, and would not be a kli on its own. The afar cheset is an afar cheset all by itself.